Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're investing in grow lights, it pays to choose something that's high quality and stylish, and that's where Soltec Solutions comes in. Their range of full spectrum photosynthetic plant lights are both sleek and modern, and they'll look right at home whatever your decor. I know that because, well, I've got some. I took delivery of one of their bulbs and it screwed straight into my standard floor light fixture for a super quick setup. But if you need pendant lights or track lights, Soltec Solutions can help too. And when you buy a Soltec Solutions light, it comes with a 5-year warranty, so you can rest assured that your light is going to last. Check out Soltec Solutions' range of lights now at soltecsolutions.com and get 15% off with code ONTHELEDGE. That's soltecsolutions.com and enter code ONTHELEDGE for 15% off. Plant or not to plant? That is the question. That's a terrible question. The answer is obviously to plant, but there is a small theatrical angle on this week's show as I head to London to discover a hidden horticultural gem. My name's Jane Perrone, host of this podcast, On the Ledge, the aural destination for all things houseplant related. And in this episode, I visit the Barbican Conservatory in our great capital city of London to find out about the incredible plant collection there. And I answer a question about a Kentia palm. I do hope you've had a fabulous week. I've been doing my annual spring clean of the shed. It took so long and it's still not finished, but it's very satisfying to clear up the disaster area that was a lot of spilled potting mix and all kinds of mess. The shed is also home to my hardier cacti and succulents. So they've had their first watering. I need to go and check on them and make sure the whole thing hasn't collapsed into a pile of mush. So fingers crossed. The plant ledger is out. If you've subscribed, you should have received a copy in your inbox. If you haven't subscribed, remember it's only going out to people who have actually signed up specifically to the plant ledger. You can sign up at janeperrone.com. There's a big link that says the plant ledger. I'll also put a link in the show notes to this episode. It's my roundup of the UK houseplant scene. You don't have to be from the UK to subscribe, but lots of the stuff in there is relevant to you if you are. On the Patreon front, Irina became a legend and Lauren became a crazy plant person. And this coming Sunday, April the 10th, 2022, I'm hosting 2 Zoom sessions for Patreons at the legend and superfan level, 1 for each of those tiers. You will have a message in your inbox from me with that Zoom link if you are a patron subscriber at those levels. It's a chance to just chat, no set agenda, just a chance to have a chat with me. So please do come and join me. And if you're not a Patreon subscriber and you want the chance to join these kind of things, then check out the show notes for details on how to do that. And thanks also to Loza P in the UK for leaving a lovely review for the show. And I've heard from several people saying, thank goodness you got rid of that water noise. And if that's you, I'm really glad that you're happy about it. But it emphasises my point said before, and I'll repeat it again. If there's something you don't like in the show, if I've made a mistake, even if it's just a typo in the show notes, please do let me know. Don't assume that somebody else is telling me this stuff, because it's hearing back from you that enables me to make the show better. So any errors, mistakes, constructive criticisms, I would love to hear them. And you can drop that to ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com. I read everything and try to get back to you as many people as I can. I can't believe I've been travelling to London for visits all my life, and yet I'd never been to the Conservatory at the Barbican. The Barbican is a really famous part of London. You may recognise it from its brutalist architecture. Basically, it's a massive lump of concrete, and it's very fine theatre. The last play I saw there was Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch in Hamlet. Yes, I was in the front row. Yes, I enjoyed every minute of it. But you may not know that the Barbican is also home to the second largest glasshouse in London. I met head gardener Marta Loftovich to find out more.
Well, thank you very much on this snowy day. Well, it's not actually snowy in London, but I can tell you there were heavy flurries on my way here from Bedfordshire. So it felt rather strange that I was coming into this rather less snowy environment of the Barbican Conservatory. And we're stood here, and there's a lovely... Is that a robin singing in the background?
It is. Actually, we've got two robins, and they are starting to build their nest in here.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, well, I'm glad there's some wildlife enjoying the trees, because you have got some really big trees in here. Mm-hmm. A high ceiling set around this central concrete tower, the classic Barbican architecture. Tell me a bit about... Lots of people don't know about this place. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about how it came to be here.
So as you probably know, or you may not know, we're based in the City of London, in the heart of London, basically. And this part of the City of London was heavily bombed during the Second World War simply because of the proximity to St. Paul's Cathedral. And after the war, obviously, lots of buildings were in ruin. So City of London, or Corporation, came up with the idea that they're going to build a new space. They give people somewhere to live and enjoy itself. And that's how they came up with the idea of building the Barbican Estate and obviously the Barbican Centre. So the project was designed by three architects, Chamberwell, Powell and Bone. And in the process of designing it, and we're talking about 50s and 60s, so that modernist, brutalist architecture, during the process of designing, they have to design the theatre. And in the old-fashioned theatre, I was told by the architect, they have to build what is called the fly tower. So the tower that holds all the flyers, so the backgrounds for the theatre. And it's, as you can see, it's in front of you, this massive concrete monstrosity. it was a little bit ugly looking. So they tried to disguise it by building conservatory around it. On the original drawings or architect drawings, you can see that there was always idea to build a glasshouse in here. The original ones was actually designed as a pyramid in Louvre. So that was that sort of triangle shape. But obviously, with the time, it evolved into this place. So the fly tower... It actually divides the conservatory into two spaces, so the west-facing space and the east-facing space, simply how we are orientated around the world.
This shows the power of plants, really, to take, as you say, this brutalist architecture and soften it with lovely plants. So we've got some hanging plants. We've got, I can see, Monstera Deliciosa up there. I can see Dracaena trees. There's lots of lovely plants in here. What climate is this kept to?
Mm-hmm. So we are London's second largest glasshouse after the temperate glasshouse in the Kew Gardens, and we have similar temperate regime. So we are temperate glasshouse. So the temperatures in here will be as low as 11 degrees in the winter, and obviously as high as possible in the summer. And also, we have a section for our arid or succulent plants where the temperature will fall as low as 8 degrees, basically, in the winter. It's all heated, but as I said, the heating is kept to minimal for the plants to survive and live.
It's literally, you're in a heat island at City of London, and this is your own little heat island, but it's not that hot. As you say, it doesn't feel a sauna-like environment. It just feels comfortable, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
So when people think about it and see it on their photos, they'll think straight, but they think it's a tropical jungle. We mimic that, but it's not the tropical jungle feel. So if we're lucky to travel to tropical jungle, you can imagine that heat and mist. Sometimes in the summer, if we get more hot summers in London, especially due to the climate change, it will get hot in here. But people say why don't you spray more water? If I spray more water in here, it will be like a sauna, as you said. Too hot, you couldn't breathe. And it happens sometimes if we water on a really hot summer day, we try to water in the morning. So when the water evaporates, obviously the heat will be, it's maybe not the heat, it's the humidity of it that we're not used to doing.
Yeah, that can get pretty unpleasant. I can imagine there are some challenges to gardening in this kind of environment, not least handling some of these very, very tall trees and climbers coming off these balconies. Do you have to get out the climbing rope sometimes? How do you keep it looking good?
Yes. So basically, when the Barbican was designed as a building back in the 50s, 60s, health and safety was not their agenda. So although it looks lovely, we sometimes have to put a lot of climbing gear, safety gear, to go into and do some plants. We came up with some weird and wonderful ideas. We use lots of long pole saws to cut some plants that we can access. If there's something which we can't do, like we try to call in every year at the arborist, so they will reduce the crown of our trees, because they will grow and eventually we cannot move the roof, so we will try to reduce the crown for the trees to fit within the conservatory. And also by doing that, we allow more light for the lower growing plants to thrive, basically, in the spring and the summer and the winter months especially.
I can see a real diversity of plants in here. Tell me about some of the stars of the show.
So we got 1,500 species in here. 300 of them are succulents and the cactuses. The stars... Oh, it's tricky to say because we got so many individual plants that is really, really difficult to pinpoint. We got some rare endangered species. So we got Obetia fissifolia. So it's a nettle family tree and it's actually in danger in their native habitat. By the way, we didn't go there and poach them. They just happened to be there. We got some, especially in the cactuses section, we got lots of cactuses from Mexico, like Lophophora williamsi, so your peyote, that is endangered in the wild native habitats. But wherever you look, it probably each plant during the growing year in here is a star for different reasons, because we got a collection of pelargoniums that they will be stars during the summer months. In the late summer, early autumn, probably it would be overtaken by chilies that, you know, were world of weird and wonderful shapes and things like that. In the winter, we got orchids, cold glasshouse orchids. We've got cymbidiums now that are flowering. So it's ever-changing. We've got birds of paradise. And what is wonderful in this place, when people come in here, and because London is so diverse, each plant is brings back the memories for them of their home, of their parents, of their travel. So for the people who visit us, different plants are different stars, basically. So that's how I try to measure, you know, the success of the place, or the stardom of the plants, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And you're right, somebody can have a plant that sparks off a particular memory of home or relatives. I mean, I guess with the one that possibly is iconic is the Monstera deliciosa, and you really are showing how this plant, even though it's growing up concrete, you're showing how this plant grows as opposed to how we have it in a little tiny pot in the house, because it's romping away up this wall here. Is that one that people particularly want to photograph and look at?
So if you go through Instagram feed, that's probably one of your popular platform now to go through, you will see that one of the most photographed plants in here, there will be Monstera deliciosas. And we do have the variegated versions in here that are quite old, and they show the lovely variegation of them. But you're right, that's how they grow in the natural habitats in Mexico. And they sort of semi-climbing, trailing, just create that massive abundance of leaves. And when we think about them in our average house plant, you know, we buy them as a little cuttings. Sometimes they don't even have the fenestration. We wait for the fenestration, but we don't realize how, or people don't realize generally how big they will grow. I've got it with my own sister. She's like, oh, I'd love to have them. I said, like, you realize your flat is not big enough to sustain that plant. And that, well, if you look on majority of those plants, you probably can recognize them from your house plants, because they are your house plants just grown to the size of the space, basically. That's what happened with them. You let them loose a little bit.
And is that an Araucaria Norfolk Island pine there
seeing? Yes, that's Araucaria heterophylla.
As we should see. Again, another plant that people grow as a house plant. And but really here, there you're seeing its potential to get very large and very beautiful. But yes, a lot. I think lots of people struggle with that. But it's a really beautiful tree. And what are these trees on the other side here? You've got a sort of four really tall trees here, which I can't immediately recognise, but I'm thinking ficus.
Yeah, you're thinking right. And if you think about 70s and 80s, that is your staple for every household. So it's ficus benjamina.
Oh, it is. Okay. So it's just, I mean, that, again, you look at that and go, oh, yeah, that's why that plant hits your ceiling and gets too big, because they're enormous.
Exactly. They are absolutely enormous. And as I said before, every year they get pruned and the crown gets reduced by 2/3, actually.
Yeah, wow.
So you can imagine how quickly and how big they can grow in the right conditions.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yes, and you don't have the problem of people have in their homes of moving them about and then all the leaves falling off, because obviously these are presumably planted into the ground. How is the soil set up here?
So the funny fact is that we're based on the third floor. So underneath are offices, theatres and all the things that make Barbican working. So our beds are not super deep. So on the deepest points, they are 1.3 metres deep. Some of them are shallower, and the ficuses were planted as a little babies. If I showed you the archive photos, they were just your size of your average houseplant. And they just, over the 40 years that have been here, they just grown to the size that you just see. So those kind of 2-3 floors almost.
It's really interesting to see what their bark actually looks like, because we're not really used to seeing that. They've got lovely, smooth, very pale grey bark, which is actually rather lovely.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like sometimes if I look on them in the right mornings or when you catch the light, it's almost like it's glistening. That
it's beautiful.
Whiteness to it.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's another example of how we sort of underestimate the potential of houseplants to get huge. And is there anything here that perhaps wouldn't be well known as a houseplant but could work in a home setting, things that you might be able to try at home that don't grow?
So there is one particular plant that is my favourite, and I always recommend it for the dark corners in the houses that people mostly struggle about. And it's a well-known plant, but it's a little bit forgotten at the moment. So it's Aspidistra.
Elatior.
Elatior, yeah.
One of my favourites as well. Although, yes, it is. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think it's coming back now. People are starting to grow it again.
There is a smaller version, which is crispa, Aspidistra crispa, and it has a white dot on them. And there's even rarer version, which has a variegation on it, so you can have the leaf variegated with white, because variegation is not necessary. White can be yellow as well, just to clarify.
Oh, well, that is a good choice, and one of my favorites, although I have a variegated one, but I found that the variegation indoors just didn't come very well, and I put it outside and the variegation seemed to flourish. So I don't know whether that's just probably light.
It is. All the variegations are related to the light, so the more light they get, the variegated plants, they will come up with better variegation. But equally, sometimes you see and I'll go back to the Monstera, variegated Monstera. So you see it on the photos, the beautiful leaves with hardly any variegation. They're almost white, if not white. If they were planted on their own, they would not survive because they don't have enough chlorophyll in them to sustain them and keep them growing. So yes, the variegation is nice, but you don't want to encourage too much of it. And you'll probably notice as well the variegated plant will grow slower because they will need more chlorophyll, that green, to keep them going.
Yeah, it's a trade-off, isn't it? And this place is open to members of the public part of the time. So if people are coming to London, they can look on the Barbican website. Do you have to book in advance still? How is it working now?
So at the moment you have to check for the dates because we share the space between lots of different types of events. But all the dates are released roughly 2 weeks in advance. So it's best to check on the website, pre-book it, the ticket, and all the dates and tickets will be released. A half an hour slot still, I think. But the tickets are free of charge, so you can get in here and we won't charge you anything, and you can spend as much time as you want inside of here. As I said, you have to just pre-book it in advance. It's super popular, unfortunately.
Yeah, I bet.
If you want to get a ticket. But I will give you a good tip. Sometimes on a day, there are some extra tickets released.
Okay.
So
oh,
if you're not lucky, you can try to do it in a day.
And do you have any problems with people who don't realise that it's not okay to take cuttings off plants from your space?
I think and like most of the spaces like that, Kew, Chelsea Physic Garden, and any space that you can imagine that I've got a collection of plants, and especially house plants that have been so popular, and even during the pandemic, if you have a collection of rare plants, yes, people think it's okay to take a cutting, or they will ask us, and we say, we're really sorry, but we don't, you know, donate or give away cuttings or even sell them. Because simply, if I had 100 people within a week to ask for a cutting, there will be no plant left, basically. Some of them are very, very, very difficult to obtain, to propagate it, you know, to grow. But yes, there are some people. We have some information to try to discourage people from stealing them or taking cuttings, but unfortunately it happens.
Yeah, and you're right, it's a problem across all gardens that are open to the public. I'm noticing a couple of other plants that I just wanted to mention. I'm loving that, I can never remember what the current Latin name is, the purple Tradescantia up there, coming down, trailing down off the balcony there.
So the old Latin name, Tradescantia
pilgrimera. It changed again now? I can't remember.
With the botany in the names, it changed constantly, and you have to be really quick to keep up with it.
Yeah, I think it's commonly called purple heart or something like that.
Yes.
But that looks so stunning, the way you got it pouring down off that that balcony.
Yes.
Trimming that? challenge?
Yeah, it's a challenge on its own. I mean, you can see some of the window boxes has been trimmed. So we try to do it with the same time as the arborist comes. So we get a good clear out in a conservatory and then everything is ready to grow. We don't trim them every year. We try to keep them, you know, every few years trimmed. But yes, it's a challenge. It's surprisingly a lot of plants. It doesn't look from the bottom like that, but
I'm sure when you lift up that and look at the back of it, it looks, you know, like that's what I always find with like big trailing plants like that. The back is kind of another challenge altogether to
it is,
remove dead
sometimes
lead.
Sometimes if I go there, I think how on earth they are growing because there's not a lot of soil that they have in that window box, and how on earth they are holding together, because you touch them and sometimes they're quite brittle.
Mm.
I think like for that abundance on that, they just create that fantastic thing.
It's not a green wall, it's a purple wall, but it's very lovely. Now we've already heard the robin. Do you have other wildlife coming in here?
So we have a blackbird as well, and they try to sometimes nest in here. We had on one occasion a duck, a mallard, from the lake below coming in here and happily swimming in our lake, but we thought it's a bit too much and we sort of encouraged them to go the wrong way. And we sometimes get a cheeky squirrel, but then again we try to encourage the squirrels to get out, because unfortunately they will nibble on our plants and they will be sorry.
I can imagine. tell me about this plant, Dione spinulosa.
So Dione spinulosa is one of the oldest living plants in the earth. It comes from the dinosaur era. So you can imagine.
So cool.
I mean, this one doesn't come from the
dinosaur. Well, no, obviously. But it's a really ancient plant. And it's got these amazing serrated pinnate leaves on these fronds. What an amazing,
sharp.
I bet.
They are very sharp. They're very difficult to prune because you have to have long sleeves and things like that. Over the pandemic, it flowered.
Oh, wow.
And it had a male flower because they are two separate, males and females are separate flowers. So we found out that he's a male.
Okay. And do you you don't have a female?
No, we don't have a female. We have another one, but we suspect it's a male as well. So
okay.
We do not produce the seeds as such.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
We'll return to my Barbican visit shortly, but now it's time for Question of the Week, which comes from Katya and concerns a trio of Kentia palms. These quintessential Victorian palms are quite something, and lucky old Katya to have three of them. And Katya is considering using Lechuza Pon in the substrate of her Kentia palms, mixing that in with the regular substrate. Will it work? Well, I very much suspect it will, Katya. Howea fosteriana is a species of palm that only comes from the tiny speck between Australia and New Zealand, that is Lord Howe Island. I dedicated a whole chapter of my forthcoming book, Legends of the Leaf, to this plant. And the speck, well, basically the island is made up of an ancient eroded volcano. So you can imagine the soil there is pretty volcanic and free draining. So I think that adding Lechuza Pon, which, as we know, is a mix that includes lava and pumice, would be a really good choice for these palms. If you remember back to my Lechuza episode, I'll stick a link to it in the show notes. There are different ways of using Pon, and you don't have to use pure Pon. You can add it to your mix either using the 25% rule, where it's a drainage level separated from the soil with a drainage barrier, the 50% rule, where you've got the root ball covered with soil, and then you've got pon around that. I think there's also probably a third option, which is just you mix in handfuls of pon with your substrate when you're repotting, and it's spread throughout the mix. I think that would work equally well. The great thing about this particular palm is that it's tough. That's why it was really popular in the Victorian era and much beloved by Queen Victoria. And it can cope with all kinds of abuse. But certainly adding some pond to the mixture, I would imagine, is only going to make the plant happier. The reason why it's happy in our homes is because they're quite similar, actually, to the weather on Lord Howe Island, which is, I think it's defined as cool or warm subtropical. So temperatures are sort of 20 to 25 centigrade in the summer, and then about down to about a minimum of 14 centigrade in the winter. That's about 57 Fahrenheit. So they live in similar conditions in their natural habitat. And then, of course, in our homes, we can offer them something pretty similar without too much effort. And because of where they live, often quite close to the sea, in coastal parts of the island, because basically the whole island is kind of coastal, they've evolved to deal with things like drought stress and shading from bigger trees, and also salty air as well. They're really fascinating plants, Kentias, and should be more widely grown. Can't wait to bring you loads more fascinating stuff about Kentia palms in that chapter of the book, which features everything from the tree lobster of Lord Howe Island to sympatric speciation, which is basically the enigma of the fact that two very similar palm species had evolved on one very small island. And in fact, the reason for that can be explained by the soil. So, yeah, more of that in the book. But given that Kentias sit right on a volcanic island, I think a bit of pon will do them no harm. Thanks for your question, Katya. And if you've got a question for On the Ledge, please do drop me a line. ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now I'm back in the Barbican Conservatory and we're heading to the special area reserved for cacti and succulents.
Where are we, Marta?
So we are what we called an arid house, so where we keep all our cactuses and succulents. So every cactus is a succulent, but not every succulent is a cacti.
Yes, and you've also got some orchids in here which are looking very fine and in flower right now. Mm-hmm. There are so many things in here that I absolutely love. Your Lepismium there is flowering. Not mine is also flowering. It's not quite as big as that. But you've got lots of plants which cactus and succulent lovers will recognise, but maybe haven't seen quite this large, because there are some really big specimens in here. This must be one of the favourite areas for people to visit, because they're just so charismatic, these plants, aren't they?
Yes, it is. I mean, with talking to the public, lots of people say the arid house is their favourite. Unfortunately, we had to keep it closed simply due to the restrictions that we just recently had, because it's a quite enclosed and small space. And it's also, as I said before, there's lots of precious plants in here, or rare and endangered, that are quite an easy target for people. But we try to, you know, grow them as much as we can and for display, hopefully in the future.
I'm just staring at this massive crassula with these beefy, beefy stems and trunk. Is that that's actually not ju- that's a, is it golem or one of those kind of?
It is. It's a golem version. So we've got three or four different crassula. So we've got your standard money trees here, crassula ovata that just finished flowering. We've got the variegated version, the humus sunset version, which is a like a yellowy red variegation, and also we've got the minor, so much better for your standard home or flat version.
Because they do get very large. I mean, that is, I mean, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 foot tall, and it's just chunky. That is a chunk of a plant. I'm loving it.
It is. I'm 5'6", so this is bigger than I am, so you can imagine.
Yeah, it is. And it's good to see what these plants turn into. I think that's one of the things that you're really getting from that. And you've got lots of hanging baskets with beautiful epiphyllums, ripsalis, a very impressive sedum, burrow's tail. I mean, is it difficult to water these hanging baskets?
So we've got...
Have you got special equipment? Please tell me you've got something.
You can see there's a pipe going on the top, and it's an irrigation system, so we can just water the hanging basket. It's much easier. Everything else in the conservatory is watered by hand, so with the hoses. So we don't run around with the little watering cans.
Thank goodness.
Imagine dungarees and watering cans. But yeah, we've got hoses and we water everything by hand, because it's such a mixed and varied collection. The best computer is our brain, so we can adjust the watering to suit the needs of a day or temperatures, and obviously to the plant itself.
How on earth do you avoid getting prickled to death when you're doing work on some of these really large columnar cacti? Is it a side effect of the job that you end up?
It is. You are getting used to do it, I think. Very often we try to put long sleeves, but you can imagine in the heights of summer it can be difficult. You sometimes get a funny looks in the train or buses from people when you stick a hand and they're all scratched out, but I think it's a side of a job.
Yeah, and I mean, it must be just a delight, apart from in the very hottest days, must be a delightful place to work. I'm just getting distracted by that huge Pereskia. That's amazing. I mean, the leafy, oh, I always think of it as the leafy cactus, but that is, or was it actually, rose cactus is its common name, apparently. But that is just, it looks like something out of a children's imagination of a cactus. It's got these huge areoles with these enormous spikes on this quite skinny stem. Mm-hmm. And then the leaves on the top. It's just an incredible plant. Are there any particular favourites in here of yours, cacti, that you particularly love? The non-spiky ones, maybe?
Non-spiky ones. So probably the Lophophora, the tiny peyote, simply because it grows 1 centimetre a year. So you can, in a good condition, so you can imagine how endangered they are if they grow so slow. And other than that, I mean, they are all lovely and they have all the, so much shapes and forms. And it's so difficult to pinpoint every single one. You look on the massive Echinocactus russoni, the mother-in-law chair. You can imagine why they call that down the chain.
I think mother-in-laws get a really bad rap from
they
plants,
do,
don't
and
they,
I don't
they?
Understand that, you know, but lots of plants have some strange connotations to mother-in-laws and to all mother-in-laws. I don't believe it's true.
That is, I mean, I guess the other name is golden barrel cactus. Yeah. I mean, they do look like barrel. Yours are just enormous. Yes, I've got a tiny one of those, and you do kind of have to remember, yeah, that's what it's going to turn into eventually. Mm-hmm. They are enormous.
It does. Lots of those cactuses were donated to us by King Cactus Collectors over the years, simply because their collections were too big. They couldn't care after them, so they wanted for them to grow somewhere that where they'd be looked after, and hopefully we do them a justice.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a lovely space to have filled with cacti, and I'm sure it's glass everywhere, so the cacti are happy. They've got plenty of light in here. We didn't really talk about whether you have enough of plants at work or whether you have plants at home. Do you
I do have plants at home.
You're a glutton for punishment.
Yeah. So I do have lots of houseplants. I live in a flat, so I don't have a balcony or the gardens. So I do have a lot of houseplants at home. The only thing is with my houseplants is once you water this or you do all the jobs in here, you tend to choose your houseplants wisely, the ones that don't need a lot of attention or they are relatively easygoing. You can forget about watering from time to time, and they will still be lush and beautiful.
So what are your choices then? Let us into your secrets.
So there will be orchids, basically. I'm a little bit of a person who buys this saddest plant on the shelf, you know, the discounted ones. Oh, well, we'll rescue you and all that stuff. Your Pileas, Peperomias, your standard houseplants, even your Ficus elastica will do without any watering. So if you're worried about your houseplants going on the holidays, I can guarantee you if you water them properly once a week after a week's holidays, they will be absolutely fine. I've got some of the Codex plants, so quite a few of them. My son started to collect some cactuses, and I'm dreading that. For the passion to basically explode. I've got, I counted around 60 of them at home.
Okay, well, it's obviously not enough time spent with plants. Well, and it's great if you're obviously passionate doing it at home and at work, so that must be a big tick. Well, it's absolutely glorious in here. I could just spend all day just staring at the plants in here and enjoying them because there are some wonderful things. I mean, I just keep thinking of the logistics for you of dealing with some of these huge epiphyllums and Rhipsalis, and I just salute you because it must be a real battle sometimes repotting some of these bigger hanging baskets.
Yeah, we are actually bracing ourselves for the repotting season. So yeah. What happens, because you can see some of the epiphyllums already have some flowers on them. So we will let them flower this year. Usually they flower around May time. So every single epiphyllum is covered by these fantastic, massive flowers. I'm talking the palm of your hand. lots of vivid colours, and once they start to fade, we will report them because we have some cuttings that we propagated.
Well, I'm just seeing some buds up on that one. This one right above us, there's some buds coming.
So they won't be thrown away. They'll be moved probably somewhere to one of our levels in a good spots, but they will need to be refreshed because some of them will get woody and tired
I mean, I think it's an interesting thing coming in here when you see these much more mature plants. You know, we're used to seeing a teeny little tiny, cactus or whatever. And then when it starts to get some corking or some woodiness, people panic. And you have to sort of say, well, that's actually completely normal. This is what happens as they get bigger. They don't stay sort of pure green. And this is a perfect example of how they change as they age.
Yeah, so the corkiness, as you said, or woodiness, I mean, it's two factors. Sometimes it's due to the conditions that they grow. So if there's too moist, they will protect themselves by producing that sort of callus or corkiness. But over the years, the stem, as you said, gets more woody, and that's how they will be in your natural habitats. You will travel to Canary Islands, Mexico, wherever, South Africa, you see them, and they will be like that. Only the tops will be nice and fresh and green. And also, you know, I get asked, like, sometimes, oh, there's some dead leaves, or, the palms have not all their leaves removed, and it's not perfect and manicured. Yes, because they are living objects, like living plants. They're not like that in the nature. We get used to it, to see them in more artificial environments where they don't have, the palms don't have their scares of dead leaves. They're just all manicured in the hotels, in the rows of streets. But nature is completely different. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just, if a plant gets to a good age, then it's got a few marks to show.
It's like we age.
Yeah, exactly.
We showed our marks, plants show our marks. So that shows how they basically go through their life.
Well, thank you so much for showing me this lovely space. And I'm just going to be in here just taking some deep breaths and taking some photos now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that tour around the Barbican Conservatory, and if you want to check out some images, do visit the show notes at janeperrone.com. There you'll also find details of how to get your free tickets to the Barbican Conservatory and a list of the plants mentioned in this episode. That's all for this week's show. I shall be back next Friday. I hope your week is infused with chlorophyll and flooded with sunlight. Bye! The music you heard in this week's episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, The Road We Used to Travel When We Were Young by Komiku, and After the Flames by Josh Woodward. The ad music was Dill Pickles by the Heftone Banjo Orchestra. All tracks are licensed under Creative Commons. Visit the show notes for details.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.